you might not be an A, but you are a B plus. Solid.
Welcome back to the Solid B Plus Podcast. I am your host, Joe Archidiacono. Thank you for joining me for another episode. On this week's show, we're going to be going over NXT and Ring of Honor from October 28th. I've got some news about new signees at the WWE Performance Center. A few notes about Lucha Underground, including dates of their upcoming tapings. News about the Young Bucks signing an exclusive contract. After that, in New Japan, the Super Junior Tag Team Tournament is still underway, but that's going to be wrapping up soon. And I've got to look ahead at what's coming next. And then after that, just a few notes about Pro Wrestling NOAH's Global League Tournament, which is their heavyweight tournament, sort of like the G1 Climax. But before we get to NXT and everything else, I just want to mention that you can find this show on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. You can find me, your host, Joe Archidiacono, on Twitter, at Joe Archie, J-O-E-A-R-C-H-Y. Find my show on Facebook, the Solid B Plus Podcast, and give it a like. You can send me an email if you want, solidbpluspodcast@gmail.com, and be sure to visit my website, delcoelbowdrop.blogspot.com, where you can find all of my articles, the weekly Wednesday Wrestling Minute article from Ring Rust Radio, as well as a bunch of Ring Rust Radio interviews, such as the most recent ones, like Goldberg is the most recent one on there. There's also Jesse Ventura and the Brian Kendrick and a whole bunch of other guys, so make sure you check that out. And then, finally, making its return, a special event on the Solid B Plus Podcast. Myself and my friends Brian Myers and Ryan Mervine, we got together and talked indie wrestling. Specifically, our time going to CZW and choosing to go to CZW over Ring of Honor in the mid-2000s. I know that sounds crazy now with hindsight, but we go pretty in-depth with it, and you're not going to want to miss it because it's a pretty fun conversation. So let's get right into the show with NXT. Of NXT's October 28th episode, Emma returns to the ring. It's not like she was injured or anything, it's just been a really long time since we've seen her in a match in NXT. She defeats newcomer Shazza, also known as Shazza McKenzie on the indies. The match itself was decent. There wasn't a whole lot to it, but there wasn't anything bad about it. Emma looked a lot more aggressive in this than I remember her ever seeing her before, which is definitely a good thing. And for her first showing in NXT, Shazza looked pretty good as well. Though, that could really be attributed to the fact that Shazza and Emma have a relationship as they both worked on the Australian indies before coming to WWE and wrestling in NXT. And they even mentioned on commentary that Shazza was the last person that Emma wrestled before coming to NXT on the Australian indies. I'm not sure if this is just a match or maybe they're building Emma up to get a title shot at some point. I mean, she definitely could. I wouldn't be surprised if Dana Brooke got a title shot before Emma right now, seeing as how Emma isn't as much of a wrestler as she is almost just a manager for Dana Brooke at this point. But it could also just be helping build her up a little before Asuka destroys her, like she destroyed Dana Brooke. Following that first match, in the spirit of election season, they give Finn Balor fair time on the air, since Apollo Crews has been getting a lot of FaceTime lately. And they showed pretty much a shortened version of who is Finn Balor, since he's defending the NXT title against Apollo Crews next week. And I really hope that they give that title match more than the standard 10 minutes for a TV main event. Because even though Crews has been impressive so far, he could really break out in a title match setting, since he'll have even more time to show off. And so I think it's fair to say that I'm really looking forward to this match. In what was probably my favorite match of the night from NXT this week, Chad Gable and Jason Jordan defeated Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. And this was a really, really awesome match. Lots of energy from beginning to end from both teams. The crowd was really hot for all four guys, and it just made for a great showing for all of them. And every time I see Chad Gable wrestle, he impresses me more. He's so incredibly fluid and makes pulling off a crazy string of transitions just look effortless. And being paired with Chad Gable has really allowed Jason Jordan to shine. It's allowed him to be the imposing big man on the team who hits his big spots and turns the tide or ends a match instead of all of the spotlight having to be on him all the time. I mean, I could say more about this match, but it would just turn into me talking about spots and sequences, and nobody wants to hear that. So just go watch this match if you haven't, because it's really worth your time, and it was the highlight of this episode for me. But you know what they say, you can't have highs without lows. And in the next match, Nia Jax defeated another newcomer, Kaylee Ray, in a pretty short match. Kaylee Ray is a indie wrestler from the United Kingdom. I'm pretty sure she is Scottish, and she wrestles in ICW a lot in Scotland. I'm pretty sure that's her home promotion. I mean, she had an okay showing. She didn't really get to do much since she was very outsized by Nia Jax, on top of the fact that they're not going to let anybody really get any offense in on her. And I ranted about this match like a lot on my blog, and I'm not going to do it here, so go check that out if you want to hear me complain more about Nia Jax, which I don't know why you would, but it's there. DelcoEvaDrop.blogspot.com. After that match, Enzo and Cass head to the ring with Carmella, and they're supposed to face Dash and Dawson again, but during their entrance, Dash and Dawson attack them from behind. They throw Enzo off the stage, and then they overwhelm Big Cass, and then they mess up his leg. They do something to it. They throw him into the ring, and then they're just stomping on it, and then at one point, I think Dawson tied up his legs, and Dash came off the top rope and stomped on his knee, so I've heard that Cass also has a legit leg injury, which is probably why this match never happened, and also why Big Cass was never in the match legally last week. It was just Enzo getting beat up, and then he had a surprise roll-up victory. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them go away for a little while, and then just the next time we see them is on SmackDown or Raw or something, once Big Cass is ready to go again. After the second part of Who is Apollo Crews, which was pretty good, but I feel like it wasn't as informative as the Finn mini-documentary. But it wasn't bad, though. It was very informative for people who aren't aware of who he is at all, really. But after that, it's main event time, and Samoa Joe looks to get some revenge on Tyler Breeze for what he did in the Battle Royal last week. Was it last week or was it 2 weeks ago? Can't remember. This match didn't get a whole lot of time, but they tell a really good story nonetheless. From the very beginning, Tyler Breeze wants nothing to do with Samoa Joe. He's running around, jumping out of the ring, just trying to get away from him at any cost to try to create any little opening he can get over the furious Samoa Joe. And by the time Joe gets his hands on him, he's practically fuming. It just turned into a really solid match. Joe got the submission victory in the end. I can't see Breeze really getting many more victories in NXT now that he's on the main roster full time, it seems. But I definitely wouldn't be against Tyler Breeze sticking around until TakeOver London to continue this program with Joe, just to give him something to do while Finn and Apollo Crews are competing for the title. And then after that, they do another pre-taped promo following the main event, like they did last week. I still don't understand why they had to put random promo after the main event of the show, but whatever. But anyway, Finn Balor's talking about a title match next week, and he puts over Apollo Crews, but he says that Finn Balor's going to win, and yada, yada, yada. And honestly, as much as I've been impressed with Finn Balor's in-ring work and his ability to connect with crowds during matches, his mic work has been kind of bland, not much creativity or enthusiasm, really. I mean, obviously, he's got his strengths in the WWE, which are his presentation and his character, and, well, like, his the way he presents his character in the ring and to the people actually while he's actually wrestling, and not so much talking on the mic. I remember he had a lot more personality going on when he was a heel, when he was heel Prince Devitt in the Bullet Club. But so far as a face in NXT, there's not much there. So hopefully once he turns heel, if he turns heel in NXT, maybe his mic work will get a little better, but right now it's just been so-so. And one final thing about NXT. There was a recent announcement of many new signees to the WWE Performance Center. And among the various Tough Enough contestants who were signed, which were pretty much like everybody from the final few rounds, it seems, there were several indie names among them as well, such as Rich Swann, Athena, and Biff Busick. And we've been hearing that Athena and Biff have been signed for a while now, but now it's actually finally official. Athena had been photographed working a few NXT live events. I don't think Biff had done anything like that so far, but he had been doing basically farewell shows on the indies for a while now, so it was all but certain that he was going to show up in NXT eventually. But Rich Swann being on that list was a big surprise to me. I had heard that he had attended tryout camps before for WWE, but was never offered a contract, so it's great to see his hard work paying off. And that's all I have for NXT right now. And look at that. I actually have Lucha Underground news this week. Oh man, I hope you guys are excited as I am for season 2 of Lucha Underground, because I can't wait for this show to come back. Tapings for Season 2 are happening soon in Boyle Heights, so check my website or El Rey's Twitter feed for information. The tapings are happening November 14th, 15th, 21st, and 22nd in, I'm pretty sure it's the same location that they were in last time. From what I've heard, they're going to be filming 3 to 4 episodes per taping this time, as compared to the 2 to 3 that they filmed in Season 1, and I would imagine that's just to lower production costs. If you watched the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view last Sunday, or Raw on Monday, I suppose, you know that Alberto Del Rio is back in WWE, and this is a very strange situation, because from what I've heard, AAA wasn't really aware that Del Rio was going to be going back to WWE, and you'd think they would be in the loop, considering he is their mega champion, which is like the biggest singles championship in AAA. And there's also Lucha Underground to consider, too, since that's owned by AAA, and Alberto El Patron was a pretty big part of the second half of the first season of Lucha Underground. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens next, especially with the AAA title. But with Del Rio's reappearance in WWE, it almost certainly means that we're not going to be seeing a continuation of the Johnny Mundo-Alberto El Patron feud in Season 2. And one final note, I don't usually report on what their cheats are saying, but I thought this was interesting enough. Meltzer is reporting that cheerleader Melissa is going to be on Season 2 of Lucha Underground, taking on the role of Marty the Moth's sister, and I was kind of hoping that that would just be Marty in a dress, just because that would be funny to me. But it's hard to complain about adding a talented female wrestler like cheerleader Melissa to the roster of Lucha Underground. And I've been seeing Melissa's name a lot lately, since she was recently named the USA branch president of Stardom Wrestling, which is a Japanese female wrestling promotion. Stardom recently started hosting some shows in California for the first time, and it'd be really cool if they went on tour, or maybe, you know, hitting some other big wrestling towns like Chicago, New York, Philly, maybe. I mean, Chicago has Shimmer, and Philly/South Jersey has WSU, so there are crowds in the Midwest and the East Coast who would turn out for a Stardom show. But I'm out of Lucha Underground news for this week, so let's get in a Ring of Honor. Episode of Ring of Honor TV on Destination America, Nigel McGuinness joins Kevin Kelly on commentary since Steve Corino is suspended, I guess indefinitely, for punching BJ Whitmer last week after the no DQ match between Adam Page and Jay Briscoe. I really hope that Corino returns to the announce position with Kevin Kelly, because they're one of my favorite announce teams today. In the opening match of the episode, Moose takes on Donovan Dijak and gets the win with a spear, and this wasn't really your typical big man match. Dijak and Moose were showing that they are just as agile as high flyers, but hit just as many power moves as they do big dives. Dijak hasn't been doing a whole lot in Ring of Honor lately, ever since he won the Top Prospect tournament, but if he gets a little bit more polish on him, I think this dude could be a big star, because he's got a pretty good look, he's got size, which is, you know, almost more important than anything else in wrestling, and he's shown that he's not terrible in the ring. So, I think that in a few years, Donovan Dijak might be something special. But Moose is already a star. I'm just waiting to see how long it is before he's in the main event scene in Ring of Honor. Next, Dalton Castle faced Cedric Alexander, and Castle seemed pretty upset that he was without his boys for this match, but that only lit a fire under him. Castle easily won the match with a bangarang, but it could also be attributed to Alexander having gone through a no-DQ match at All-Star Extravaganza against Moose. And speaking of that match, after Dalton Castle won, Veda Scott got on the mic and yelled at Nigel McGuinness for putting Cedric Alexander in a no-DQ match. And then she says that that constitutes a hostile work environment and says things are about to get a lot more difficult for a Ring of Honor, insinuating that she's going to sue them. Because I think that it's been used as part of her character in Ring of Honor that she's also a lawyer as well as being a manager in Ring of Honor, which she is in real life. I'm pretty sure that's her day job. And this just shows how slimy and underhanded Veda Scott and Cedric Alexander are willing to get what they want in Ring of Honor. And this combination of Veda Scott and Cedric Alexander are working very, very well as heels. They aren't setting the world on fire just yet, but they aren't over-the-top caricatures of evil either. They're whiny and manipulative and calculating, just all the characteristics of, like, truly despised heels. After that, Truth Martini and Jay Lethal head to the ring, and Truth wanted to use the time to talk about how great Jay Lethal is, but it's not long before he's interrupted by Roderick Strong. There's a lot of really great back and forth from Lethal and Strong in this. And even though a lot of people talk down about Roderick Strong's personality and charisma, I thought his delivery during this exchange was very, very well done. And Lethal just continues to be the best on the mic in Ring of Honor, maybe in the whole business. Roddy is saying that he wants another world title shot, but Nigel says he's got to go to the back of line since he's already lost twice. But since Jay Lethal beat Watanabe, there's no TV title number one contender, and he makes Roderick Strong the TV title number one contender. And usually you'd think if a company books three singles matches between the same guys in a short-ish amount of time, you'd get sick of it, but not this. Lethal Strong has produced two incredible matches so far, and I'm really looking forward to the third. And in the main event of the episode, Red Dragon and Michael Elgin teamed up to defeat the Kingdom in a great six-man tag match. This was just a really, really fun match, with Elgin, O'Reilly, and Fish working very well as a team. And the Kingdom continues to make a push at being the top heels in Ring of Honor, thanks in large part to Adam Cole. After the match ended, Adam Cole attacked Kyle O'Reilly, Michael Elgin, and Bobby Fish with one of the tag team title belts. And then as the Kingdom are walking out together, O'Reilly grabbed a mic and he's got some choice words for Adam Cole. He says he wants to face Cole right here, right now, but Nigel McGuinness says that because Adam Cole's already wrestled, he can't make him wrestle again. But next week, Adam Cole is supposed to face AJ Styles. He can't take Styles out of that match, but he can put Kyle O'Reilly in it. So somehow, the already amazing sounding Adam Cole versus AJ Styles gets even better with the inclusion of Kyle O'Reilly. And of all the great matches that Ring of Honor TV has showcased in the past few months, this one could be the best yet. And one more final note, the Young Bucks have signed an exclusive deal with Ring of Honor. This announcement was unexpected, but not necessarily unbelievable. The Bucks are the biggest free agents in wrestling right now, so this is a big win for Ring of Honor to lock them down. And having recently watched the Young Bucks documentary from High Spots, I learned just how important family is to both Matt and Nick Jackson, and being able to spend more time with their family was no doubt a big factor in their decision. And unlike past exclusive Ring of Honor deals, the Bucks deal still allows them to work for New Japan as well as select indie dates. It's been reported that in the past, Ring of Honor exclusive contracts have negated guys like Michael Elgin and Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly from working any independent date they want to, you know, specifically PWG. But it's reported that this Young Bucks deal will still allow them to work PWG when they want to, since they consider PWG very important to, you know, the growth and the success of the Young Bucks. Because when I heard about this, I immediately was excited for the Young Bucks and excited to at the prospect of being able to see them more often in Ring of Honor. But then I thought, but what about PWG? Like, when this happened to Kyle O'Reilly, he had to drop the belt right away. He was the world champ and then just had to drop the belt immediately because, you know, he wasn't going to be coming back. And same thing sort of happened to Adam Cole, too. He had he had the belt and he was at the top of his game in Ring of Honor, and then they signed him to an exclusive contract, and then he was never seen again in PWG, even though he was the biggest heel in the company at the time. So a PWG without the Young Bucks was nearly unthinkable. But thankfully, the Young Bucks have just that much clout that they can sign an exclusive contract with Ring of Honor and still get to work any indie dates they want to. And that brings me to the end of Ring of Honor. So let's get into New Japan and round out the show with some indie news.
Young Bucks! Go home! Please go home! Young Bucks!
So I watched the first round of the Super Junior Tag Team Tournament in New Japan, and I gotta say, it was pretty good. The Young Bucks versus Taguchi and Mascara Dorada was, that was really fun, and it worked in a lot more comedy than I thought they would've. But considering the other matches were so hotly contested and high-flying, you know, they needed a little bit of variation in there. Though, the Time Splitters versus Matt Sydal and Ricochet was definitely my favorite match from the first round. And this means that Red Dragon will face RPG Vice in the next round, which we've seen a lot of times, but it'll still be pretty good. And then the Young Bucks versus Matt Sydal and Ricochet, which has the potential to just be incredible. And those next round of matches takes place on November 1st, and that's going to be on New Japan World. And you can find the card for that show on my website, as well as the preliminary card for Power Struggle. And then a few more New Japan notes. Enuhito is reporting that Shinsuke Nakamura will defend the Intercontinental title in an open challenge match at Wrestle Kingdom 10. And if he retains that title at Power Struggle, where he's facing Carl Machine Gun Anderson, this will be the fourth year in a row that Nakamura defends the IC title at Wrestle Kingdom. I believe it was Sakuraba, and then Tanahashi, and then Ibushi last year. And so if he still has it by Wrestle Kingdom, he'll be defending it for 4 years in a row, which is pretty insane. And following the Power Struggle Tour will be the World Tag League Tour, which is the heavyweight tag team tournament, and that begins on November 21st and runs through December 9th. And then after that tour ends, the road to the Tokyo Dome begins on December 11th. So get hype, Wrestle Kingdom season coming up January 4th. They haven't made any mention if it's going to be on pay-per-view here in America again, or if they're going to have English announcers. But I got to imagine that those announcements are coming soon. And another Japanese wrestling note, not New Japan. Pro Wrestling Noah is hosting its Global League tournament right now, which is basically their version of the G1 Climax. You can see the full standing of the Global League tournament on my site, but here's just some highlights that I took away. Chris Hero and Colt Cabana are taking part, since they had a big run in the Global Tag League as Big in USA. In Block A, Hiro is tied for first with Naomichi Marufuji, Takeshi Sagara, and Masato Tanaka with 8 points. And I really can't believe that Masato Tanaka is still wrestling. I mean, with how many times that his skull was caved in ECW. But more power to him, man. That's awesome. And Chris Hiro also has wins over both Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith, continuing Big in USA's feud with the Killer Elite Squad. But he's also lost twice already, which probably sinks his chances of winning. And Colt really isn't having much luck in Block B, since he's only got 4 points. But in Block B, Shelton Benjamin is tied for first with 10 points. But the person that he's tied with is Suzuki Gun leader Minoru Suzuki. And since Benjamin is in Suzuki Gun, that probably means that Suzuki has a pretty good chance of beating him. In fact, it seems like Suzuki only has Suzuki Gun opponents left in Shelton Benjamin and Takeshi Iizuka. So it seems pretty clear that the GHC champ is going to be winning Block B at least. Block A is a little murkier right now. Like I said, Chris Hero has 2 losses, and they were to Quiet Storm and Sagira. And he still has to face Marufuji, so he's pretty much out. Masato Tanaka has 2 losses, but he's also beaten Marufuji. He still has 1 more match left against Lance Archer. But Archer could spoil Tanaka's chances of winning if he picks up the victory. And finally, both Marufuji and Sagara have 2 matches left each, and they each only have 1 loss. Tanaka beat Marufuji, but Sugiura lost to Marufuji. And I definitely see them winning their final two matches. And since Marufuji won their head-to-head match, it seems like he'd be the ultimate winner and go on to face Suzuki for the Global League Championship. One would hope that that would lead to Marufuji getting another shot at the GHC Championship and maybe finally getting Suzuki-Gun out of Pro Wrestling Noah, but I really don't know if that's what's going to happen. And that's all I have for Japanese wrestling news notes right now, so let's move on to some indie stuff before we get into the special main event. I mentioned Colt Cabana a little bit before, and he mentioned on his podcast recently with Bob Holly that he's going to begin working on Wrestling Road Diaries 3 pretty soon, which is very, very awesome to hear. I haven't seen the second one, admittedly, but I have the first one, and I bought the special edition first one, so I got like a whole bunch of bonus stuff too, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was put together very well, gave you a great idea of what life on the road for an indie wrestler is like, and it was really funny. And speaking of funny, the third installment is titled Wrestling Road Diaries 3, Funny Equals Money, which will focus on Colt traveling with Grado and Kikutaro. And that title, if you don't know, is a play off of the well-known slight from Jim Cornette directed at Colt, where he claimed that funny doesn't equal money, and Colt is clearly aiming to prove him wrong. And the idea for this documentary is really unique to me for a few reasons. It's going to focus on the use of comedy in wrestling, which is often overlooked or looked down on by fans who think that wrestling needs to be like super serious, strong style all the time. And so not only will it give a focus to comedy in wrestling, but it will also allow three of the top comedic wrestlers in the world to give their views on the use of comedy in wrestling. And not only that, but from three wrestlers who have completely different backgrounds in wrestling, as Colt Cabana comes from the Midwest scene in America, Grado comes out of Scotland, and Kikutaro is Japanese. And I didn't realize it at first, but I've actually seen Kikutaro a few times. He used to work in CZW in the mid-2000s under the name, Abe-san, I think it was. And I always really enjoyed seeing him in CZW. Like, he didn't seem like he would fit in Combat Zone Wrestling, but he fit in perfectly, and I'm really looking forward to Wrestling Road Diaries 3. Colt said that filming hasn't even started on it yet, but that he hopes to have it completed and on sale by next WrestleMania, which is what he said, so I'm assuming he means WrestleMania 33. Maybe 32? That would be cool. I don't know, though, so I'm just going to keep my ears open. And finally, GFW crowned their first champions recently at a Amps TV taping, I think is what the name of the show is. Nick Aldis, formerly known as Magnus, is the first global champion. Christina Von Erie is the women's champion. The Bollywood Boys are the tag team champions. And PJ Black, formerly known as Justin Gabriel, is the next gen champion. I haven't really followed GFW that much yet because right now it's just kind of seems a little bit too much like TNA for my liking. But once the TV show starts, if it starts, I guess, and if they actually ever tour in Philly, I might come around to them a little bit more. For right now, it doesn't do much for me. Still, I really like their first set of champions. I'm not at all familiar with the Bollywood Boys, but I really think that this group of champs can get some positive momentum going for GFW, and that hopefully someday GFW turns into a great alternative for fans. And that's all I have in terms of indie wrestling news right now. But stick around, because the show's not over. For once, well, for the first time in the past few weeks. I mentioned it before, I sat down with my buddies Brian Myers and Ryan Mervine. We talked about our history with CZW, specifically the war between CZW and Ring of Honor, and why we chose the side that we chose. And that's happening right now. Back to another very special event on the Solid B Plus podcast. I'm your host, George Giacchino. With me, as sometimes, is Brian Myers and also Ryan Mervine.
Yeah. Hello.
Today on the show, we're going to be delving more into the indie wrestling side of our fandom. Going back to the beginnings of our indie watching wrestling fan history with a little company everyone knows and loves called CZW.
I wish you had like sound bites so we could start playing that amazing
Jesus!
Song.
Jesus! I gotta look it up. I might just shove it in
what
there.
What do you mean what happened? Did you see him? Jesus!
I was talking about the theme song.
Once again, prepare for war.
CZW! Did Zandig sing that song?
I don't have the
slightest clue. No, I think White Beater sang the song.
I don't think either of them did. I think it was
fine. Shoot me down that without researching it.
I did. That's totally what
I
said.
Like, no! It doesn't work! We're starting over again!
Go home. I am home.
This talk, it's going to be... Man, it's going to be a little off the rails.
Man, yeah, when it was that hard to say off the rails, it's not a good sign.
I couldn't think of the words proper in my brain.
Talking is hard.
It's getting late. It's very late in the evening. I guess it's morning.
Technically.
It's technically morning.
It's getting late early in the morning.
It's getting late into that early morning. But
it's
not so much we're going to talk about just... We're not talking about just CZW, but mainly...
What we gave up to be fans of CZW.
Yeah, what we gave
There's
up
a point.
To be go to CZW. And that sounds weird, but it'll make sense as we go along. And, well, I mean, I'll explain it slightly, I guess, because otherwise it won't make sense. Is that back when we were going to CZW in the early to mid-2000s, CZW, they would often do angles with other companies, like invasion angles, war angles, whatever.
I felt that first invasion angle very hardcore before anybody else did.
When Ian Broughton stepped on your foot?
It never happened. I tried to no-sell it.
Yeah.
I
was like, no. You were like, what the fuck? Oh.
Yeah, that was
But the main one, the one that we're talking about right now, is their feud with Ring of Honor. And in that feud, being fans of CZW... we sided with CZW.
Big
that
reason
war.
Why was because Chris Hero was a savior. At the time
also,
yeah.
Also, aside from that, CZW's team was monstrous in that feud.
Yeah.
Like even though like they ended up like kind of jobbing the entire feud, it was like you look at their team and you're just like, holy crap! That was like a who's who of like independent wrestling.
It was Necro Butcher, Super Dragon, Chris Hero. Eventually, Claudio turned on ROH and joined.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there wasn't there another guy?
Nate Webb.
Yeah, I think Nate Webb was in it,
and
too.
And at the time, Nate Webb was, like, the man, you know?
But what we're saying is how we sided with CZW, and we only went to CZW shows, and never went to Ring of Honor shows, even though they were running in Philadelphia at the time when guys like Punk and Danielson and Joe and Christopher Daniels were, you know...
In
like main eventing Ring of Honor shows, and we were just like, "Fuck that shit!
Yeah.
We're going to CZW. Fuck those guys."
Well, that was like before the time too when like WWE was poaching those guys.
Yeah,
so it was like Ring of Honor had this like they slowly became the top.
It was like one of the most special times in their history as a company. And we just totally were like, fuck that.
Yeah.
We're going to
see
CZW.
We're going to see Nick fucking Gage.
Yeah.
Nick fucking Gage.
And looking back on it.
Made a mistake.
Pretty dumb idea.
Kind
of dumb.
Well,
I feel bad for myself.
I have.
I mean, hindsight's 20/20. Yeah. I mean,
but I also have. We'll get to it. But I have some opinions as to why it wasn't that bad of an idea.
Okay, and we'll get there. So, but we should start from the beginning. And me and Bri on an earlier podcast, which should have aired by now, talked about how we got into. CZW and well, indie wrestling, they're like hand in hand, really. But Burbide wasn't here for that. And since, you know, his experience in that was pretty integral in it as well.
Yeah, he's like, he
how did you
me.
Get into CZW?
Okay, so.
Or indie wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, like, of course, a lot of people probably say, oh, the first indie thing I saw was ECW. And that's true. But, like, I'm not really counting that because by the time I got into ECW, ECW was ECW, you know, it wasn't like just, hey, have you heard of this little indie promotion? It was like, everybody knew what ECW was. Like, I feel like it was the third promotion for a period of time, even though it didn't, you know, compete full on. So, aside from that, it's like, you know, I only really ever knew, you know, the WWE, WCW and ECW, and that was it. Like, I didn't really know there was, like, this whole other world of wrestling. Like, you always assume there's, like, little territories and stuff, but I didn't know that there was this world of, like, companies running these, like, huge shows and bringing people from other countries.
And really close to where.
Yeah, and I didn't. I never would have thought that there'd be ones that were, like, running out of Philly or whatever. But I remember Channel 48, which was, like, the local access...
WGTW.
Yeah, yeah. Terrible channel that always played, like, nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like, late at night, like...
Because I think there was a show, it was, like, a half-hour program after, like, CZW or ECW, where it was just, like, people doing the electric slide at, like, banquet halls.
Well, I do specifically remember it was either before CZW or after CZW. They would play Cheaters, which is one of the best shows of all time.
Cheaters.
With Joey Greco. Personal hero. But, yeah. But either way... Yeah, I remember, like, my brothers and I, like, we're kind of night owls, you know, and, like, during, like, the weekends, because I think it was on Saturday night, or no, Friday nights. I don't remember. One of the nights.
I don't remember, yeah.
Well, it was either Friday or Saturday nights, like, we would just, like, be kind of flipping through, and I remember my brothers mentioning, they're like, you know, they play wrestling on Channel 48, and I'm like, well, what? It's probably terrible.
Yeah.
And I just, like, so happened to be flipping through the one time, and CZW was on, and it was back when they were running out of, like, crap Jersey and crap Delaware. It was like these little tiny like gyms and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely terrible. But I remember watching it and being like, these guys are awesome. Like, I've never seen wrestling like this before, you know? I remember immediately I was like, Nick Mondo's the man. Because like you see him doing stuff and it was like, he was like using chairs and tables and jumping off things, but he also could wrestle. You know, even
the intensity that a lot of people didn't have.
And I'd never seen anything like that because, like, I mean, you knew in, like, the main shows, like, in ECW, it was a lot of garbage wrestling. Like, it would, like, have the garbage wrestling, which were, like, the real hardcore guys, and then you would have more, like, the luchadors and, like, the light heavyweights and the guys that could actually do chain wrestling. And they separated them to a point. Like, they'd mix them a little bit. But there was, like, a pretty big division. And WWE, it was almost non-existent. It was, like, they tried to mimic the whole hardcore stuff for a while. And you'd have your Mankinds who were just, like, the anomaly, you know?
Yeah.
But then I saw this, and, like, I'm noticing most of the matches, like, even the guys that were just straight clean wrestlers, like, they're bringing chairs out and annihilating each other with them. Yeah. There's, like, barbed wire bats and light tubes and stuff. And I'm like, this is some crazy stuff. And I remember the show was called Fake You TV.
That was the weekly TV show.
Which was hilarious. And I think it was... Eric Gargiulo would just, like, stand in front of a terrible green screen with, like, the CZW logo bouncing around like a screensaver behind him. Like, he would, like, you know, just be like, we had a show, like, 2 months ago, and here's a match from it. And they would just play it, and then there'd be, like, an unconnected match on afterwards. It was, like, there was no summons of order to it whatsoever. But a lot of the matches they would show were, like, from their big shows, because that's all they only ran once a week, so it was pretty awesome.
Once a month.
Once a month, I'm sorry. So... I remember, like, just being all into it, and they would always pitch, I think it was offthetoprope.com, was where they were selling CZW shows, and my thought, I'm like, hell yes, I'm gonna buy some of these, right? And they didn't have a lot of shows at the time, because I think they started in, like, 99,
yeah,
and that was probably, I want to say 2000 I started watching
it,
so it was, like, real in the infancy, and I was like, man, this is really cool, and, like, I was unaware, and, you know, I remember going on Off the Top Rope, and it'd be like $15 for like a recorded VHS and a slipcover that had a printout with like in like Gil Sands,
yeah,
just saying all the matches. It was like, so, and I can't believe I paid $15 for this crap. But like, you would, you know, they would have other like promotions there too. And I'm like, wow, there's like a lot of stuff here, and that's kind of my first how I was became aware that there was a whole world of indie wrestling, but. When it came to me being, like, actively involved, like, it was when I started getting these tapes, and, you know, I bought a ton of them, like, right off the bat. Like, I had pretty much, like, every tape from when they started till when
and
I started
you just
watching.
Randomly brought me over. Hey, watch this.
Because I had had them for, like, a while, and, like, I had friends that liked wrestling, like, kind of in passing, you know, like, they knew of wrestling, and they would watch it, but they weren't, like, hardcore fans, and, like, my brothers and I were, like, hardcore fans, and... Once we got into CZW, that, like, really springboarded it. Like, we were like, man, this is the real deal. Like, these guys are awesome. And I would always try to show my friends. I'm like, look how crazy this stuff is. Mm-hmm. And they would just dismiss it and be like, that's weird. I don't care. And I remember when I met Bryant in high school, you know, we were talking about wrestling. I'm like, yeah, this guy really likes wrestling. Like, he'll probably think this stuff's insane. Because, like, it was always fun to show people the crazy stuff. Like, I had the tape of the... the first 200 light tubes match. I think it was like
Nate Hatred and Wife Beater. Is that the first match you showed me?
I think so. Because it was Nate Hatred and Wife Beater. And I remember it's like a pretty good garbage match. Like, yeah, you know, if you could say that type of thing. Like, where they're actually doing moves, but they're just killing each other. Mm. I remember I showed him it. He was like, what is this? Like, he's like, this is crazy. Like, this is, like, absolutely crazy. Like,
what was the first question that
came
out?
Well, hold on. I was like, well, that wasn't the first thing you said. Because, like, I was like, all right, you got to watch this. And I showed him, I think it was Stretched in Smyrna. Yep. And they were like, they tied Zandig to the ropes, and then they like were weed whacking
his... It was from one post to the other.
Yeah, and they were weed whacking his back and doing all this crazy crap to him. And, like, I remember Brian just turns to me, he's like, how is this legal? Like, he was, like, genuinely upset by this.
Like, man getting tortured. Yeah. Like, that's what was happening.
And it was funny, because, like, that match is not good. And it's not even really a match. It's just, like, a torture scene.
It's just a beatdown.
But then I think I showed you, like, the tag match where it was Jun Kasai and Nick Mondo versus Johnny Cashmere and... Or no. It was, Johnny Cashmere and Justice Payne, I think. And it was, like, that crazy death match thing they had. And
Where
Jun Kasai just gets murdered the entire time.
Yeah, he was just taking elbows.
Oh, God. And, yeah, his, like, elbow popped out. And he was still wrestling. But, yeah, I remember watching, like, all these tapes. And, you know, I showed you, and, like, we started getting into it. And I think, Joe, I think you had kind of been watching some stuff at the time already.
Like, yeah, I got into it on my own. Like, I found it on WGCW.
Yeah, which, like, was weird because you watched
them. You guys didn't even know each other at that point.
So it was cool.
Around the same time that you guys got into it.
So when we were, like, you know, hanging out and going to shows, then it was like we kind of pitched the idea because I personally had never been to an indie show. I'd just been to, like, a handful of actual wrestling shows. And, like, we're like, you know, because CZW had, like, around that time, they made the move to Philly, and they did their first show at Viking Hall, which was Cage Death 3, and it was, like, this big thing, and that's kind of when CZW, like, really blew up. Like, they went from being, like...
Yeah, that's when they really took off, because that was the biggest show they had put on.
Well, it was the first time Viking Hall sold out to that capacity, and they turned people away.
Yeah.
And it had never happened. Like, they didn't even have the proper permits to, like, turn all the lights on, I remember, and, like, so, like, half the thing's dark. It's weird, but...
It was a weird show. Overall,
but I mean, like, but they knew how to, like, you could tell by watching that show, like, they knew how to put on a big show. Like, they, even though they were an indie promotion, like, they had this mentality where they were able to make it feel huge. And, like, that really impressed me, too, you know? And so I think, like, after that, that's when we were, like, kind of paying more attention. Like, hey, they're doing every show in Philly now. And that's when, like, I think the end of that year, we decided to go to Night of Infamy.
Yeah, because that was the end of 2002.
Yeah, and 2002 was, like, when Cage Death 3 was. Or that was the end of 2001, right? Or was 2001? I don't remember.
Cage Death 3 was 2001, because Cage Death 4 was the end of 2002. The original Night of Infamy was the show right before Cage Death 4.
That's right. That's how I got into indie wrestling, but... The funny thing about, like, the other promotions, like ROH and you know, PWG and all those, and especially...
Well, because PWG didn't exist.
No, that came later.
Yeah, they started, like, 2004?
Yeah, they were, like, kind of mid-area when we were...
Because CZW had already been established for several years.
Well, CZW did a lot to help PWG, as well as a lot of other companies.
They gave them a lot of exposure on the East Coast.
Well, even with ROH.
Like, B-Boy and Super Dragon Steen and El Generico really broke in through PWG, not so much IWS.
Yeah,
because they came in through IWS and CZW, but it was really PWG where they made their names and they got popular.
But they got... They were able to leave Canada. Yeah, they
did a lot to...
They brought them to the States, basically.
Yeah, to bring them and PWG more exposure. Yeah.
So, I mean, the cool thing I found was, like, because my brothers, like, they're the type of people that, like, when they would get into something, they would, like, get into it obsessively. So, like, they were, like, they knew every wrestler in the indies. They knew every promotion in the indies. Like, my own brother would get, like, tapes and tapes and tapes. So I had, like, access to some of this stuff. You know, I didn't really follow it super closely either. So they had, like, some ROH stuff, some mostly IWM and South. Like, they were really into IWM and South. And, like,
there were a lot of stars, surprisingly.
Well, it's, you watch that and you're, like, first of all, knowing the stories of Ian Rotten being a horrible promoter and just, like, not paying people.
Just person in general.
Yeah, just a bad human being. Like, it's amazing the people he was able to pull and the shows he was able to put together with the talent he had and, like, continuously.
Well, because I remember I've heard like Colt talk about on his podcast a lot how back in those days in the Midwest, like the Chicago area, mm-hmm. and just like those just empty Midwest states, there wasn't a lot of opportunities for them to put on shows, and right. like a guy like Ian Rotten, who had built a name for himself from ECW, was putting on shows, and they were like, "Well, it's like the best opportunity they had in that kind of area." So,
well, I think
that's the way he was able to draw like Christopher Daniels and CM Punk and Samoa Joe Hero.
What was nice about that, especially when CCW brought in guys, or you know, like. From other promotions and all that stuff, like you've been only watching WWE, you see the same wrestlers over and over and over again, and like seeing other wrestlers from other promotions and seeing what their deal is, like we got to see a lot of talent go through CCW.
Yeah,
a lot of talent.
Yeah, well, before they were anybody.
And the cool thing too is like even the talent that didn't go anywhere, like they were guys that you're just like, man, if the culture was the way it is now back then, we probably see a lot of those guys with long runs in WWE. Yeah. You know, like there were a lot of those guys that were super, super talented, and it just didn't swing out, you know? And it happened with other promotions. Like ROH, there were a bunch of guys that made the jump way before they should have.
Mm-hmm.
And like when they got there, WWE wasn't ready for that type of wrestler.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, look at the Colt Cabanas, look at the, what's his face? Paul London's, like guys like that who like Brian Kendrick's, like these guys that were amazing in the
Evan
indies.
Evan Bourne,
yeah, and like they never really had a fair shot because there was no NXT, there was no attention to, hey, these guys already have a name, let's let them do that.
Let's capitalize on that a little bit.
Rather than like just throw them to the wolves.
Just them being on the card, they sold tickets.
Right.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh shit, Evan Bourne is fucking coming.
And when you have...
I'm sorry, what? Matt Sydal.
Matt Sydal.
And when you... But when you
have... You're just like, oh, okay, what's this guy? I see this guy.
Well, it's funny, because I remember, like, one of the first, like, even before, you know, American Dragon, Bryan Danielson became, like, the thing in the indies, I remember the guy was Paul London. Paul London was the indies for, like, a good period of time.
AJ Styles was...
Well, but AJ Styles was, like, already kind of, like...
Very established.
In, like, mm-hmm. you know, the NWA...
And Christopher Daniels was, too.
Yeah,
I'm saying
as far as, like, indie guys. Like, guys that weren't even, like, looked at. Because, like, both of those two guys were in WCW for a short time before they folded.
Yeah.
They were in that tag tournament or whatever. But Paul London was, like, the king of the indies, like, king of ROH. He was, like, the man. And I remember when him and Spanky got pulled over, Brian Kendricks, in case people don't know. But when they got pulled over, I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. Like, we're going to get to see some stuff we've never seen in WWE. They made him a tag team because they didn't know what else to do with him. They had Brian Kendricks do that stupid naked thing for a while, where they should have learned from Midian. And, like, they had them, like, in a tag team that won the tag titles and then, like, never wrestled. Like, you never saw them on TV.
Yeah, I never really watched WWE during that time.
I didn't really either,
but I didn't care.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Like, after the whole alliance and invasion angle and all that stuff, like, I pretty much died off after that.
So. Yeah, but we're getting
off topic.
Slightly off topic a little bit here. We're going to redirect back to how and why we stuck with CZW.
I don't know.
But as in why we never at all went to Ring of Honor. And only went to ZZW.
Like, going back thinking now, I don't know the reason why.
I don't know either.
Like, I know we were all about CCW, because that's all we did for 4 fucking years.
Yeah,
like,
every month.
Like, I pretty much, every like, month, told everyone in my life just to deal with it. I'm not hanging out this Saturday, because I already...
Second Saturday of every month.
Second Saturday.
Like, I had plans. Like, I, like, probably, like, ruined a good portion of my relationship, because, like, her sister was getting married. I'm like, well, I don't care. I'm going to CCW. I made these plans, like... Last month.
I made these plans since we started going.
No, but seriously, what are you wearing?
No,
I'm going to this wrestling show.
He's like, oh, no, seriously, what are you wearing? I'm wearing my CCW shirt. I'm going to the wrestling show.
What, a wrestling show?
Like, yeah, I kind of am.
But...
So, I don't know. There's just, like, this hardcore loyalty to it. Like,
Like,
it was kind of like...
Because it's like...
It was like that bro kind of day. Like, mm-hmm. We all kind of just, like... You know, you're up in college, like... We were all kind of spread out all over the fucking place, but there's always that one day a month, and it's just like CCW was at the heart of it.
Yeah.
And like,
we always made time for that.
Yeah. Like, obviously, there was other wrestling we could have gone to, but like, CCW was our thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't, like, we, you know, we were comfortable in the crowd. We pretty much, we didn't talk to other fans, but we were comfortable
not knowing
yelling at other fans.
Yeah. But like, I don't know, just the loyalty just took over, and just like, yeah, you know, ROH, they had the talent or whatever, but I don't feel compelled to get, go. I don't know why I thought that.
Yeah. But, like, because even thinking back on it, like, even today still, CW is made fun of for inconsistencies and the awful booking and stuff like that. But, like you were saying, that, like, it was our thing and it was special to us because of that. And I think that, like, even though it was, like, shitty a lot of the times, and, like, we could look, but, like, we could look past it because, like, it was our thing. And, like, it was still a really fun thing to do. You know, where else could you go to, like, a social gathering, basically, and scream at people and say whatever the fuck you want to them, and then have them, like, scream back at you, and it's all just part of the show.
Yeah, it's very interactive.
Good fun, you know?
Like, you know, like, case in point, that, like, that one random time where you, like, Justice Payne was behind the bleachers and he, like, yelled something at him, and then he, like, literally turned around and, like, screamed at you and you're like, oh my god, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or that time Eddie Kingston, when he was in that tag team, I forget who he was tagging with, like, it was so long ago. I was just, like, literally falling asleep and then he just, like, yelled at me for no fucking reason. Yeah. I don't remember what I did.
You were falling asleep and he's like, what the fuck? Why are you sleeping during my match?
We was so tired.
We got yelled at a lot.
Yeah. And then, of course, me yelling at DJ Hyde every single show.
Just, and every chance.
To the point
got.
Where he pushed me, literally.
Yeah.
And I did nothing about it, like, a bitch, but
you got fucked out by the lariat, the mastodon.
But, like, I don't know why we never transitioned that. Is it, like, just going to wrestling shows? It's only just.
I think
CCW
it was just because
shows.
We had that just that much of, like, brand loyalty to CCW that, like, it was that special to us that it was, like, our thing that, like, when Ring of Honor came along, and for me anyway, when Ring of Honor came along, it also brought an awareness of their fans.
Yeah.
And the interaction.
I hated their fans.
Yeah, the interactions I had with any of their fans on, like, message boards and stuff was that they were the biggest douchebags in the entire world.
They were just so elitist and so smarky.
And it's just like, we're all fucking douchebag smart. Well, not douchebag, but we're all stupid smarks because we're going to an indie wrestling show. We're all.
That's the first
step. Watching wrestling. And it's just, we're all wrestling fans to,
like,
begin with. But they would look down on us because we were CZW fans.
And I think that added to the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. That, like, I didn't want to be part of
I didn't want to be part of that crowd.
If
I felt like
all
I was
going to
get a fight.
Like that, you know?
I felt like I was going to get a fight with the other ROH fans.
Yeah,
and
like,
I was like, literally.
With the CZW shirt on, I didn't want to be hassled.
We would be in the ring with the CZW guys back in the
month. Trying to, like, explain the pure rules to me. You know, about, like, why you can only have so many rope breaks. Shit.
I think like that's a big thing too, because, like, even now, like, look, I appreciate that, you know, that whole, like, pure wrestling, and I like it.
Yeah.
But back in the day, like, Ring of Honor focused a lot on that. Like, they're a little more hybrid now.
Yeah.
And
it's,
like,
it's a much more
encompassing.
Yeah, diverse wrestling organization.
Yeah.
Whereas back then was.
It was all just, like, mat wrestling and chain wrestling. And,
yeah.
Like, the,
it, was too,
and,
it was very focused on the mat. Product,
which is good, but the elitism is what made it a big problem.
Yeah.
But I
of
also
the fans.
Yeah. And I also think there was, like, another thing that kind of contributed to us never making the jump to ROH is back then they never had consistent dates in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they ran out of Philly, but they didn't only run out of Philly,
Ohio a lot.
And they didn't have shows every month at the same day. Like, whereas CZW, we always knew second weekend, you know,
yeah.
We had CZW. Whereas, like, ROH would be like, oh, there's an ROH show in 2 weeks. There's an ROH show in a month. Like, it would just be, like, this haphazard thing. So there was no real consistency. And at the time in CZW, despite the silliness and, like, the things that were happening that didn't make any sense, like, there were really strong storylines. Like, and you wanted to see the storyline play out. And because none of that was really televised, like, fake UTV didn't show you anything important.
Yeah.
You'd have to buy the tapes and wait 2, 3, 4 weeks for them to get delivered. So it's like, you wanted to see it as it's happening and not read it on the internet, you know? And it was like, and because we were invested in the storylines was why we were like, CZW, CZW, CZW.
And there was a good amount of time, too, where, like, pretty much everyone in the car we wanted to see.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, remember that
rightfully
whole Jimmy
so.
Rave, like, time?
Yeah.
Like, we're
Dude,
all,
Rave
like, really
awesome. Yeah.
High on Rave, and then he won the title.
Yeah, and
he
that...
just disappeared randomly one day.
And that reminds me of another point about CZW in the mid-2000s was, it was almost like an all-star promotion.
Yes,
it really
where
was.
Absolutely.
They had a lot of homegrown guys, you know, like Chris Cash and Ruckus and, you know, like Nick
Niles
Gage
Young.
And Nate Hatred and guys like that. But then they brought in tons of guys like the Super Dragons and Excaliburs and
Roderick Strong.
Roderick Strong. Homicide, the Briscoes. Yeah. Homicide.
SAT.
Cheech and Cloudy.
Teddy Hart.
Yeah, Teddy Hart for two shows.
just like the PWG guys, the IWS guys, the IWA Mid-South guys. Just like
Chikara would run Chikara matches at CZW shows.
Yeah. That like reminds me also too, because like with the whole ROH stands, they fought
like and ROH didn't seem like that they to me. It seemed like they used their own guys. And that
well,
was it.
The thing about the ROH fans, like you were getting at, is like they thought all the CZW fans were just like deathmatch marks.
Yeah, that was a big problem.
Like,
too.
Have you seen some? Have you seen Best of the Best? Like honestly, like we still like. We may once in a while be like, oh, you do anything, there's a CCW show going on. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But, like, we've really tried to go to Best of the Best the last 3 years, and something always fucking happens. And
that was always our history with Best of the Best. Yeah. Shit would always
Your
happen.
Your car would just crap
out. Yeah, it was always
something.
Because, like, Best of the Best, like, it used to be just a junior heavyweight thing, but then it just branched out to anyone who wanted to, like, come in and were just like, holy shit. Like, we didn't just like the death matches, because at the time, after Night of Infamy and Cage of Death, there was no death matches in Philly. There was only that one show in the summer. So it was, like, really about the wrestling. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, they had the, you know, Necro or Gage coming and just hitting people with chairs and stiffing and all that stuff. But
but that was the variety that CZW offered.
But the Strong Style tournament was freaking awesome.
Yeah, as compared to, like, Ring of Honor, which was just one
you never had diversity in the matches. Like, you'd have these great wrestlers, and these guys, they could put on a clinic, you know?
But it's like, that's all that would do every time. And it's like, it's great wrestling, and you knew you were going to be in for a great match, but you knew that's all that was going to happen.
Right. and that's the thing, too, that, like, I think is important when you're running a wrestling show, is, like, you don't want to be streamlined to, like, this is all we do. Like, this is our thing, right? Like, you got to follow this. And again, that's why, like, Lucha Underground's so good, because they diversify what they're doing.
Yeah,
there's great storylines. There's hardcore wrestling. There's, like, really good luchador wrestling. There's, like, more, like, mat wrestling. Like,
yeah,
they're all
really
over the
world.
Yeah, it's
a good mix of North American
and
Lucha Libre.
And if it were just a Lucha Libre show, it would probably get old pretty quick. Even though Lucha Libre is exciting. But it's like, you know, you can have the best wrestling in the world, but you have to have... You have to be able to showcase different styles for different people's interests. And I think the thing that CZW had working in its favor, though, is that it was almost like somewhere in between your pure ROH-type wrestlings and your complete and utter garbage wrestlings from, like, a lot of the stuff in the Mid-South. Like, IWA had a lot of diversity, too, but, like, they had a lot of garbage. Like, all their deathmatch guys were terrible wrestlers.
Yeah.
Whereas in CZW, a lot of the deathmatch guys could put on an awesome match otherwise.
Yeah.
So, like, that was another big draw, because it's like, when you had a deathmatch, it was going to be a good match on top of it being violent as hell. And, like, that was always interesting to me. Like, that's why Nick Mondo always drew me in. That's why, you know, guys like...
It's like they could do that hardcore style, like wrestle death matches, but they could incorporate it into a regular match.
And that was to me
or
when
just anything else.
Yeah, and that was to me when like death matches were exciting, because they were doing different things. Like the stakes felt high. Like anymore, when I see them, they kind of not the old ones, but I mean like anymore, they feel kind of like they're either trying to just get gross with it, you know, or they're just like they're just not doing anything. Like it's just back to garbage wrestling, and that's a shame. Because I think for a very, very short time, like maybe like 2 or 3 years, like death matches were interesting. Like
when they were just when they had the different layouts for Cage of Death every single year. Like after, because Cage of Death 4 was like a regular cage setup, but then 5
was
the crazy
insane,
suspended,
with
and then every single year after that, they tried to have it be different, and then they were always trying to come up with like different stipulations for matches and stuff, and not just like death matches, but like. Remember the high stakes match?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, that was like, what was it? It was
the Iron Man's title.
The Iron Man title,
yeah,
and
Justice
the world
Payne's
title.
World title, the Iron Man title. But then there was Messiah's career.
No, Nick Mondo's career.
It was
career.
Nick Mondo's career and Messiah's girlfriend, right?
Because that was a storyline.
It was creative.
Yeah,
it was a really cool match because
different.
The point was everybody had something to lose. Like,
yeah.
It's not one of those matches where it's like, you know, my career versus your hair, and you're like, well, clearly this guy's going to win.
Yeah.
Like, so.
It's like a loser leaves town match between a guy who like it's like he started the company. He's going to be here every week. It's like I don't think either of these guys are going
to
leave.
Which actually, that was another thing that CZW did that I thought was interesting, is they actually found ways to surprise people, even the internet smarks. Because do you remember when Sanjay Dutt was basically in TNA and like he was still kind of wrestling with CZW, like, off and on.
Yeah.
People were like, he's leaving, and they had that whole storyline where his title got stolen by M-Dog 20, who was, like, a regular, right?
Yeah.
And they were gonna, like, they were gonna have, I don't even remember what type of match it was. It was, like, a False Count Anywhere match at, like, I think it was a Cage of Death or something. And they're like, you know, it's, if Sanjay Dutt loses the title, you know, his career is over, he has to leave town, loser leaves town type thing. Or no, it was a loser leaves town. It wasn't even like, yeah, you know, the title thing. It was just loser leaves town. And I remember everybody's like, well, clearly Sanjay Dutt's going to lose. Like, holy shit. Like, this sucks, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, they have the match and M-Dog 20 loses. And Sanjay's like, I ain't going anywhere. And everybody was like losing their minds. And I'm like,
then he joined like Pandora's Box.
Yeah, that was just amazing. But I mean, but moments like that, like, or the IWA Mid-South invasion, like, I don't ever think I remember another company, WWE, ECW, any other company in my entire life pulling off an invasion the way they pulled that off.
It came out of nowhere.
Felt legit as hell, because I remember them saying they had those guys sitting out in the car. They didn't tell anybody in the locker room. And, like, they came in without a single person knowing they were even going to do this.
Yeah.
And it was like, the entire crowd rioted. Like, remember, the chairs were thrown without being coaxed, which was terrifying. But I mean, but
we were front row.
Yes, we were. It was very scary. But it was one of those things where, like, you know, I think back to it, and I'm like, that was, like, genius booking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had some shit, terrible, like, stupid booking, but that right there was genius. And that entire storyline leading into the High Five being the one they were, like, using IWA Mid South as hired guns to get what they want, I'm like, it just flowed perfectly into Cage of Death 5. Like, without having to use any of those IWA Mid South guys, because that storyline was over. Like, and that's something I know we talked about before with, like, WWE. They don't know how to transition storylines and keep things going correctly. And again, to me, that's where CZW kind of hooked us. Like, interesting stories. Like, where ROH, from what I understand, around that time, like, there weren't really storylines. It was more just like,
it was like feuds between wrestlers.
I'm the number one contender. Yeah. Like, you know, which I love that, but that was it. It was all ranking system feuds and stuff. And, like, they had little things here and there, but CZW had these, like, intense, like, you know, intense feuds.
Feuds that you knew could escalate to a different level that you weren't going to see in any other promotion.
And you cared about, and they would cross promotion constantly back before it kind of got out of hand. And like, with the IWA Mid-South thing, I remember when they were in the midst of it, and it was all happening in CZW, and then IWA Mid-South had their King of the Deathmatch tournament, and like, all the CZW guys came in, they bust a bunch of fans down, and it was like, they made it like a real war, and I was like, this is done perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, both companies are treating it great, and like, I kind of wanted to use that to transition into the ROH feud they had, which was handled horribly, because they let ROH have everything they wanted in it.
Oh yeah.
ROH got the best never of every, won. Yeah. every never single little won. Angle of that.
They won basically every match that they had between the two companies. They got to have the Cage of Death match.
It was
made
all
no
on
sense.
Ring of Honor's terms. Like, none of that shit really happened at CZW shows. Like, there was one instance I remember where, like, D-Bry, or
Danielson.
Yeah,
Danielson. No, it wasn't even Danielson.
It was Danielson. He showed, because he was the champ.
No, it was Christopher Daniels.
And it was Danielson, because he showed up at a CZW show, and he was bad-mouthing them, because it was an afternoon show, because they had a show that night.
Were we not at that one, or was I not at that one? I don't remember that.
To be honest, I feel like, I don't know if we were there. I've seen video of that happening, but I don't, like, remember it happening.
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah,
how
right?
How would we have not been there?
Right? I don't
of all
know.
The shows?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, I've tried to...
Yeah. Like, Chris Hero was our guy, and he was, like, the CZW guy.
Yeah. He was like the
leader. So there was no way we were not invested. But even then, like, I had the DVD where it was just like, oh, I remember the show. And then, like, oh, was Chris here the champ? It was like, no, he was never champ. Oh, he is a champ. It's like, we forget a lot of what we watched.
It was a long time ago.
But anyway, like you were saying, it was just bullshit the way that whole thing was handled, because Cage of Death is CZW's thing, and that didn't even happen at a CZW show.
Yeah.
It's like, that happened at a Ring of Honor show.
It wasn't
even in Philly. It wasn't even in Philly. They didn't, like, book, they didn't hype it to the CZW fans, so, like,
we didn't even know what happened.
Half of that feud, we didn't even know what was going on.
Like, so, like, CZW couldn't go and support them at the show. It's like, Ring of Honor wouldn't want more ticket sales show.
And the bullshit thing, too, is, like, the marquee time they let CZW take the reins was that Two Worlds Collide thing.
Yeah.
And the only match they had there was that tag match where it was, like, all the top ROH guys against Blackout. I was like, you didn't even try to put together, like, a team. Like, it was, like, they just, like, were like, all right, well, you're going to have to put, like, your tag team in against a bunch of our top guys. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, the booking just was, like, stupid. The only
It was just so It was just so much in Ring of Honor's favor.
The only thing they did that I actually...
There's no way CZW is going to come out looking good.
Right, but the only thing I actually kind of liked, which they did, was like when they had, I think it was Best of the Best, because they had some of the ROH guys in there.
Yeah.
And they had Christopher Daniels and like Ruckus, and Ruckus beats them. Because like Ruckus had the title at the time.
Yeah.
And like they were like, whoever beats Ruckus wins the title. And like you're
and
like...
And you're like,
Christopher Daniels is clearly going to beat Ruckus. And Ruckus like beats him clean, and like Christopher Daniels shakes his hand. And then Ruckus, after he like wins, I think he won that Best of the Best.
Yeah, I think
and
he
then
did.
Christopher Daniels comes out, because like you think he's like going to be neutral, and he comes out and he like joins ROH like hardcore. I was like, that was well done. That was a good angle on CZW's terms, which was cool. Even though they still came out on top, which they always did. But it was like... But that's the thing. And I think that was another thing that kind of pissed us off about Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they were like, we were like, what was that shit?
Because we could see through it even without being like Smart Mark fans, being on the internet hearing about it, you know, all the time. But, yeah. But regardless of all that, it would have been nice to see some of those shows. Yeah. I mean, looking back,
see more
the stars,
of CM Punk, Brian Danielson,
we had access to those guys and just didn't
we were
see
so
him.
Disgruntled.
I mean, we've seen our share of stars.
Yeah.
You know, by like...
Especially now with like a lot of the guys coming up in like NXT and WWE.
Whether it's Kevin Steen lying
like,
to me
at Wendy's.
We pretty
much saw the rise of Claudio Castagnoli.
Yeah, or whether it was you asking Claudio what kind of cheese he wanted on his hoagie.
I didn't know the answer at that point in time. And I looked at him and he gave me a look. I'm guessing you recognize me because I was a really loud fan.
Yeah.
And we did have him do a dance off.
Yeah.
Well, you weren't there.
I don't.
We were at the dance off.
That was with.
We were sitting on the smart
Human
side.
Tornado.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you were there. But...
I don't think I was.
Yeah, because it ended up, it was like Human Tornado in the ring, and like Claudio gets in. And like, there was no reason for there to be a dance off. And we both got up and we're just like, dance off, dance off. Yeah. And then the crowd's like, dance off, dance off. And like, so. Human Tornado's like, sure, and he starts doing, like, you know, splits and stuff, and then Claudio turns, and he just, like, does, like, the nerdiest, weirdest little dance, but everybody, like, lost it.
Because
he was, like, a villain at the time, but everybody's like, he just did a dance! That
and
was
then,
awesome.
Like, the following week, he comes in my Wawa, and I hand order, take his tuna salad sandwich, and, like, he's like, I'm like, do you want cheese? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, well, what kind of cheese? And he just looks at me and gives me, like, a shameful, like, you know, nod or whatever, shake to his head, and I'm just like, Swiss.
Because if you're not a super smart, he was a Swiss banker back then.
And
it was a very big part of his
character.
You know,
like, we were
character.
Really big into Hero and Claudio at the time. Yeah. And, like, the next week, Hero comes to my line at the register, and I'm ironically already wearing my Chris Hero shirt underneath my Wawa shirt.
Yeah.
And, like, I pretty much, like, marked out like crazy, like, he's, like, the best guy I've ever seen. You know, we're huge on him. Mm-hmm. And then I pretty much, like, made him feel like he was going to get raped.
Was he in danger of that?
Like, I had to be like, stop, shake my hand, please. And he's like, all right, guy, I got to go. I'm pretty sure this whole time Brian Danielson was ordering a sandwich, and I just totally bypassed him.
Yeah,
like, I'm a Chris Hero!
Funny how
my hero! Look, I got your shirt on, like... I came off as a stalker.
Yeah.
Like, I was waiting for that moment. But anyway.
But, I mean, yeah, but that'll happen when you meet people that mean a lot to you.
But it's true. Like,
but anyway, wrapping up this topic. CCW, it meant a lot to us.
It's still in my heart.
It still does.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of regret not going to Ring of Honor when we had the chance, but...
I don't.
Those fans were douchebags.
They were.
Yeah.
It's different now. It's different now. The atmosphere is much different now.
Well, I think because they're becoming like one of the only ones worth going to.
Yeah, but
it was a lot different.
Well, and you know what? The other thing, I just want to make one more point before we like cut this thing off. I'm sorry, but like
because we got to wrap this up, we got to put a bow on it.
Okay. But the other thing too is the like ROH's production quality back then were like they looked like a scrubbed little.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
fed. Like, because they were running out of, like, gyms and shitty places like that. Whereas at the time, CZW had, like, lights and screens and, like, big shows and, like, selling out thousands of people.
I think they had two speakers at that time, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Two.
But they're down to one now.
But, like, that...
But there was still the crazy technical shenanigans.
You
like, remember Cage Death 4 when they were showing that video?
And you couldn't see it.
Of Zandig, who was supposed to be getting beaten up before the show, but then, like, you didn't know what was going on, and there was stuff with, like, a contract that, like, Z-Bar had.
Yeah.
And then Zandig showed up later, and, like, he was all bloody, but like, you couldn't see the video. Or
hear it. Oh, I know, we heard it.
You could hear, like, stuff getting broken and, like, people, like, grunting and, like...
Oh, there were wacky problems.
CCW was not perfect.
No, but what I'm saying is there's something to be said for, like, production quality and things. Because, like, because, you know, even just, like, the venue itself, like, Viking Hall, there's, like, an aura about it. And just being there and seeing a wrestling show was amazing. And, like, it's not the same when you go to, like, a gym or, like, a, you know, a fitness center.
The National Guard Armory.
Or a skate zone.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, that's just, like, one of the other things. Like, there's a lot of little reasons, I think, that, like, CZW at the time was the top indie fed, ROH included. You know, it was a big deal.
They talked themselves up a lot, and they had a lot of guys that went on to become bigger names.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at just pure indie promotion that showcased a wide variety of not just athletes, but matches and styles, like, you really couldn't beat CZW back
then.
And, I mean, as much as people make fun of it, that's the truth. Mm-hmm. And there's... We just debated it, I think pretty strongly. I think pretty soundly.
I think we answered our own questions on why we didn't go to ROH. Because, like, going this, I'm just why didn't I go to ROH?
I feel much better about
it. And then I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's why. You know,
and you know what? There's always the tapes to watch them back. So.
Yeah, I can go watch that Year 5 DVD and never and not miss anything.
There you go.
All right, and that brings us to the end of another very special roundtable edition of the Solid B Plus podcast. I've been your host, Joe Archidiacono, with me, as always.
Sometimes.
Brian Myers and...
The real Brian Myers.
Brian. The real Brian Myers.
I'm going to keep this feud going until he answers the call.
Are you Slim Shady now?
Don't put me down.
And Ryan Mervine, and we are out of here.
Ta-ta.
What are you, Leo Kruger?
yes, I am.
Fucking Leo Kruger.
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Solid B Plus podcast. Thank you for joining me. I hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed the special event, special main event, special attraction, just trying out different names. But thank you for joining me. You can find the show, the Solid B Plus Podcast, on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. You can find me, your host, Joe Archidiacono, on Twitter, at Joe Archie, JoeArchy. Give the show a like on Facebook, subscribe on iTunes, do all that stuff, I'd really appreciate it. Check out my website, delcoabodrop.blogspot.com, for all my articles, weekly Wednesday Wrestling Minute articles, Ring Rest Radio interviews, all that good stuff. And that's it, I'm out of here. With the air that's in my mind and in my soul, I'm driving blind. I got a picture in a box and